Welcome to Indie Piece, an in-depth look at the independently developed video games that we call masterpieces. Presented by OK Beast, I'm your host, Blessing Adeoye. Yo, what's up? Welcome to Indie Piece. Indie Piece is a podcast series dedicated towards celebrating the independently created video games that we hail as masterpieces of the medium. Every episode, we take a look at a different indie game, deconstruct it, and analyze what makes it a work of art and stand out amongst the rest. On this podcast, we'll be taking a look at indie side-scrollers, walking sims, physics games, and games that have broken the mold of the medium. Season 1, we've taken a look at games such as Celeste. We're going to take a look at games such as Inside and Cuphead. This episode, we're discussing... Undertale. I'm your host, Blessing Adeoye. Joining me, we have, of course, Alex Van Aken. What's up, Alex?
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for inviting me on another episode.
Thanks for coming on another episode. I know you really like Undertale.
Mm-hmm, very much
I, like, begged you for, like, a year to play it, and you eventually played it when it came... Was it when it came to Switch, or did you play it on PS4?
I played it on my Vita, actually.
Wait, really?
Yeah, years later. Dang. So you begged me for... Probably 2 or 3 years, actually.
Yeah, for a while.
Yeah, for a long time. And I actually didn't play it until, I think it was like June 2018, I played it for the first time.
Dang,
and just binged through it and fell in love and platinumed it, and which I never do. I never do those things.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, very good. Love it.
And I played it on PC like when it originally came out, probably like a few months after it originally came out. I think it was early the next year, like that January.
Yeah.
And I replayed it on PS4. When it came out there, and I also platinumed on PS4 because that game has something that just like pulls you in and you kind of just want to do everything in there.
Yeah.
Third guest, we have Michael Hyam. How's it going, man?
It's going all right. I feel great because I want to thank y'all for having me on your podcast.
No worries. Yeah.
I've been keeping an eye on what OK Beast is doing, so you know that's how I know about y'all. But it's great to be a part of this. One because I see y'all out there doing your thing, but also because Undertale is one of my favorite games of all time. Like,
yeah,
man. I can easily say it's in my top 10 of all time. And
oh yeah,
my top 10 favorite, I would say. Look, if a game makes me cry by the end of it, that's a good like indication of where it's going to be in my like top favorite games of all time. So
yeah,
oh yeah,
oh man, yeah. The Undertale really got me, man. I remember I played it in 2016, so I didn't play it around release. So kind of the rabid fandom had already been out there, but I avoided it, thankfully. But when I played Undertale myself, I remember I just moved into a new apartment. I was living on my own. And then I got this game. I was like, everyone's talking about it. I'm usually into indie games. I love my 90s RPGs. You know, Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy VI, Super Mario RPG is some of my favorites of all time. So I looked at this and I was like, oh, okay, it's tapping into that. So going into like, all right, you got some choices. You can do non-lethal runs, whatever. But we'll see where that takes me. And I did not expect Undertale to get me in the way that it did. And obviously we're going to be talking about that today, and I'm more than happy to do that because any chance I get to talk about Undertale, especially over on at GameSpot where I currently work, if there's a chance to talk about Undertale, you know, I'm going to do it.
For sure, man. I'm glad to have you on. We've been following each other on Twitter for a while, and so I've seen like you work at GameSpot, like you said, and you do good work over there. Do you want to let people know like what is your position at GameSpot?
Sure. I'm an associate editor and a part-time host, video host. Anytime they need someone to host a video or like at E3 and upcoming, this is being recorded before GDC. I suppose I shouldn't say that.
I don't know. on this website, people know that we're kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
When we record. So.
Yeah. And GDC is coming up. I'm going to be hosting the Indie Mix stream that we're having. For
oh, nice.
So, you know, I can handle myself on camera. So they're like, they recognize me. But yeah, most of the time I'm writing, editing. Do a lot of features, do a lot of previews, go to press trips, do reviews, all kinds of things. But yeah, that's what I do for GameSpot. And, you know, me and the homies here at GameSpot are doing some good work. So, you know, we're trying to build a brand, you know, let y'all know that we're out here. So,
yeah. Of course, if you want to follow Michael, you can follow him on Twitter at Michael Hyam. That's Michael Higham. Oh, Michael P. Hyam. I messed it up.
Yeah.
So that's Michael P. Higham.
Yep.
Off the bat, coming to this episode, what's your guys' story and sort of feelings on Undertale? We talked about it a little bit. Alex, I'll start with you. Where are you at with Undertale?
So Undertale, similar to Michael, is one of my favorite games of all time now. I think where it really, I was kind of in a rut, I felt like, both personally and in like just general, like when I'm not feeling good in real life, like I'm not going to be enjoying games as much, you know what I mean? I don't get as much enjoyment out of it. And I was kind of in a rough place, and I was kind of getting back on my feet after being laid off. And so like emotions were high, you know, all that stuff, and kind of Undertale came in, and it's humor and like the music and the writing and its characters really kind of touched me in a special way. And like really, you know, helped me to get back into kind of, you know, not just gaming, but like, you know, more personal stories and games. And I really, it kind of hit me out of nowhere. Like I had gone into it really expecting, you know, expecting high things from it because of all of the fanfare around it for years. Like, I knew I was getting into something special, but I didn't really know how it was going to play out. And so I knew some things about the game already. Like I was like, okay, I probably don't want to kill anybody. And so my run, I never killed anybody in the game. And I only did one playthrough. I did the True Pacifist playthrough, and that was my experience with it. But
so you didn't even accidentally kill anybody.
I think I killed like one person and then restarted the game.
Okay. Cause yeah. I couldn't remember if it was either you or Moises, but I had a conversation with somebody who like, cause I feel like this probably happens often where somebody, killed whatever the first person they ran into. I think it might have been like the dummy that you ran into for like the tutorial. I think yeah. People kind of go in there and it might murk that thing just off an instinct.
Yeah.
But like, yeah.
I actually didn't mean to kill it. I pressed the wrong button and then I was like, no. Oh. So I instantly turned off my PS Vita and like restarted the game.
Did the game remember that?
I think Flowey said something to me about it. Yeah.
Okay. Because yeah, but Undertale does the thing where like the second playthrough, it'll reference your first playthrough a
yeah,
lot.
Yeah. And so I did that. I was still able to do True Pacifist because back then I didn't really know like how all the playthroughs worked together and mm-hmm. how this playthrough was this end. Like I didn't know any of that. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to just restart this. And then like that thing happened where Flowey, I forget the exact words, but Flowey essentially recognized the fact that it wasn't my first playthrough, even though I'd only played like 10 minutes prior, but you know. Mm-hmm. But so that's kind of like my experience with the game is like I went into it. I am not an RPG guy. Like I know Michael talked about Chrono Trigger and all of those games. That was not me. Like I remember Final Fantasy Tactics Advance. I love that game. But like outside of like a few exceptions, like I was not like the RPG kid. And so I missed out on a lot of classics. And so I didn't really have that affinity for those kind of that genre and those kind of games. And so going into Undertale, I was like, am I gonna enjoy this? Like, I feel like I have my walls up, but everything and all the writing, the characters, like I said, it all kind of wove together and made just an experience that really, really moved me. Yeah.
Michael, what about you?
For me, I went into Undertale after about a couple years playing a lot of, you know, shooters, action games, a lot of multiplayer. I played a lot of, you know, in those late 2010s, I was really into Counter-Strike Global Offensive. I was playing a lot of Battlefield games. So, and I had grown up with RPGs. But there was the period in which I got into PC gaming, I kind of tailed off and went into different genres. So I kind of lost myself for a while, I guess. But yeah, when Undertale came around, when I actually got to playing it, it tapped into a lot of things games that I loved from the past. Not just from its aesthetics, but in terms of like what it asks you to do and the types of emotions it pulls out of you. So that's the thing with Undertale. In a broad sense, when I think about it, is that game covers a wide range of emotions. It's that game, like, get me in my feelings. It's cute as hell. All right, first off, and then the music also kind of like sets the tone for what it's like, chiptune with some live instruments into it. So I was feeling that. And then it's like, oh, like Toriel's like my mom. She's like kind of walking me through this world that I don't know. So I'm like, okay, cool. We got some characters who are going to take care of me and all that. And then it's kind of spooky. And then once you get to Snowden Town, you're like, oh, here's like a living society of monsters. But then you venture off into the waterfall. And then that's also kind of spooky. And then it kind of gives you backstory into the lore. And almost, you kind of dig into what the monsters as a society are feeling. They feel so like you get this feeling of helplessness. So that's another emotion that I didn't expect when I was playing through this game. It's like, damn, these monsters are really like going through some shit.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. And then, so there's helplessness. There's also like happiness when I'm chilling at Grilby's and like everyone's just enjoying themselves. But this game is also terrifying, like in many ways, especially towards the end of this game. I mean, I'm sure spoilers are on the table here because we're talking about the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's some shit in this game just like genuinely terrifying, like chills down my spine, especially because it does a lot of fourth wall breaking. And that's to me, I'm not too much into horror games like zombies or like, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
What really gets me is when like games fuck with you psychologically. And yeah. Like Undertale does things like that. It's not overt. They don't overdo it. But Undertale itself has those moments. So when it does strike, it strikes hard and it does it in a way that's like really clever. So there's a lot of cleverness too into it. And it's terrifying. It's cute. It's heartwarming. It's also depressing in some ways. And also the way you approach this game has a big effect on what kind of emotions you get out of that game. Because if you, like for me, I did a full true pacifist run like you, Alex. And then that's kind of like, I don't want to go back. And I tried going back and doing a genocide run because I just wanted to see it through.
Yeah.
But it just felt so wrong.
It did, right?
Yeah. And then
I still have to do that playthrough. My excuse was, oh, I'll wait for it to come to Switch. And then it came to Switch and I was like, yeah, but I don't want to kill all these these folks. Like,
yeah,
I don't want to commit myself to it because it seems wrong.
Yeah, I didn't want to ruin my interpretation of how the story played out.
But for sure.
When I did try and do the genocide run, it was very spooky in a different way. Like just real quick, like when you know that you've pretty much wiped out an entire area for the genocide run, the music will play at like half speed. And these kind of cool, intricate songs that, you know, are like well developed. They're super catchy. In some ways, they have like happy tones. Some of them are minor key tones, so they're a little bit more serious sounding. But when you slow them down in this context, where it's like, you know, you get the battle prompts and it says like, hey, no one's gonna come your way. They're all hiding or they're all gone. And like, you have these songs that you recognize that you kind of grown with. Playing at half speed and it sounds like spooky as hell. It just has like this strong twist on what your interpretation of the game was.
Stuff like that is super messed up and effective. Doki Doki Literature Club is another game that does a similar thing where
big time.
Yeah, things start to take a turn in that game, and then like once they do, the music like it doesn't necessarily play well. It does play slower, but then also like notes just play in like incorrect places.
Yeah,
and
it just gets distorted. Yeah,
yeah, it gets distorted. It's really eerie and really off-putting.
Yeah,
that's pretty. Ew.
Yeah, there's so much more to get into, but yeah, just like from a broad perspective, just like all the different feelings that this game like taps into is one of the many aspects that I'll always remember about this game.
Yeah, and I'm with you there in terms of the game being... The game's also in my top 10. Like, I don't know where my top 10 ranks. I need to go back and look at my list and see. But there's something about the game, and I think you touched on it quite a bit with how it appears as cute and friendly, but then also it's in some places it's very dark, and it's almost like a sleight of hand that it has where it's like, okay, yeah, we'll present ourselves in one way, but then... deep at our core, we'll actually like embody some sort of like deeper meaning, deeper message, dark tones, and like a lot of the animation, right? Like in the boss battles too, like when Undyne has like, or I can't remember if it's Undyne or maybe it's Asgore who like has a spear and then like it's Asgore who breaks
Asgore,
the box, like the
I think
box?
It's a spear or mercy spare. Box,
he breaks that, and like the animation just feels super. It's almost anime-ish, but in a way that is like, yeah, things are serious now. Like we're not being cutesy, we're not being friendly. We're in serious mode.
Yeah,
we're in sicko mode. all that stuff super vibe with me. And the game also vibe with me for like all the reasons you guys already touched on. But let's get into some game facts. And so I usually do research for these shows. The thing about this game, out of all the episodes we've done so far, which has only been like three. But the thing about this game, it was not fun to research because the fans of this game are off the chain. Like out of any fan base I've like encountered on like YouTube and stuff, the fan base for Undertale is very out there. I'm not hating at all. like, do you have fun, live your truth. But man, going through YouTube just to ingest content for this game is a very interesting journey, and I very much suggest it if you're down to like find something new or learn something new or learn something about a community that you might not have known was there. But yeah, game facts. So the game was developed by Toby Fox. Who is Toby Fox? Fox's most popular work is the 2015 breakout Undertale, of course. Fox worked on the entire game independently besides the art assets, which he asked Temi Chang, whose real name I believe is Tyoki, to help with, to avoid relying on others. He had some experience in game development before Undertale, using RPG Maker 2000 with his three brothers to make role-playing games and Earthbound ROM hacks in high school, most notable of which being Earthbound. Or Earthbound the Halloween hack is the name of his specific Earthbound hack. He thought of the character designs and ideas for Undertale while in college, where he drew them in his notebook. Mm. So this game is made by pretty much one dude with the help and assistance of Temi. I think in the credits they know some other people who either had some additions or inspirations for Undertale.
Toby Fox and friends.
Toby Fox and friends, exactly. Yeah.
He's also the composer for the whole game.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
It's wild because Undertale has one of the best music soundtracks, like best video game soundtracks.
Also, I've ever heard. Like the music theory on display. Like I don't know how deep Toby's, you know, musical roots go, but there are some tracks that are doing some pretty complex things. And it's wild how all of it tied together and he pulled it off. It's just insane.
Yeah, and I didn't include it here, but while he was in high school, I believe he composed music for a webcomic, a pretty popular webcomic.
Okay.
I can't know what the webcomic's called.
Homestuck.
Wait, what's it called?
Homestuck.
Homestuck, yes, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And I never checked it out. I didn't know webcomics could have soundtracks or music. But yeah, like, interesting tidbit. He had music experience, and like it really shone in this game. So let's get into plot and setup. Undertale is a role-playing game. Players control a child who has fallen into the underground, a large secluded region under the surface of Earth, separated by a magic barrier. Before we go further, do you guys have any thoughts on the setting of the game? Because it's an interesting kind of place. Because like, it's definitely like a monster inhabited world, obviously, but like, there's something about it that feels off and interesting in a way that like, I wish they would explore it more, because I want to learn more about what makes this world function and kind of who these people are, because it's not your stereotypical kind of underground world I feel like you get from most fiction that takes place in like a fantasy with like monsters and stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, the entire place takes place in the underground, and for reasons, you know, there was a big war and they were kind of outcast to the underground and kind of where that's where they survived, and that's how they were able to survive, and they were kind of locked in this underground place. And so you'd think, like, typical, you know, RPG settings, you'd think like, oh, like, you know, dark caves with torches, but no, you have like, you have a civilization under here, you have monsters who you know, who survived and kind of, you know, want to get out someday, and kind of they have a few people like Asgore and Toriel are kind of their hope to, you know, one day break out. And it's an interesting place, because you have, like Michael mentioned earlier, Grilby's. Like, that is like such a, when you go into this, when you start the game and it's like they tell you like this person fell underground into the world of monsters, you don't think of like a Chili's bar and grill ripoff. Like
oh shoot, I didn't even think of Chili's.
So like it's and then there's like just there's such a diversity in like biomes that you go through. And so I think going into Undertale, I didn't really expect all that variety, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. Michael, did you have any thoughts on the setting of Undertale?
Yeah, I think for me, it's the setting, like you, Alex mentioned, there's a lot of biomes. So it kind of funnels you through a lot of variety of visual styles and different types of places that these monsters live in. But the fact that, you know, there's this overworld, or there's this world above the surface, and then there's this underground, kind of reinforces the idea of, you know, seclusion or just like an oppression of a type of people. So, you know, I think a lot about xenophobia when I look back at this game, and kind of like the maybe this is going a little too deep, but you know, what happens to a group of people or a society of people when they are not like the victors in a war or something?
Yeah.
It's that they, you know, they are essentially oppressed by who the victor was. And that's what's happening with the monsters here. And also when you talk to all the monsters, they're like, there's a lot of mixes of how they feel about the place that they live in. There's a lot of like, you know, questions of what does freedom look like? Is it building a life down here and accepting that this is where we are going to live and die? Or is it, you know, trying to break through to the surface and maybe, you know, starting a life like above the surface here? Or, you know, because that's kind of the struggle between Toriel and Asgore, where Asgore says like, no, we can't venture off beyond the underground. This is where we need to be. And well, Toriel kind of says the same thing too, because she's like trying to tell you in the beginning, like, no, you don't want to go out there. It's dangerous. Like, trust me, you don't want to get into all that shit out there. So there's a lot of, there's just, the setting is kind of, like Toby Fox uses it to kind of amplify the story of what it means to be free. What does it mean to be oppressed? And how do different types of people react to that? Because some really don't care. Some are very adamant about, you know, changing their lives or something. And so there's just a lot of that ties into the setting of Undertale. And I think that they, like, Toby Fox uses that to great effect.
Yeah. And I didn't even think about like the xenophobia aspect of it. Cause like, while doing research for this episode, I feel like every time I look up Undertale, I learn something new about the story of Undertale. And so like, I kind of went in and kind of learned more about Azrael and who Azrael is, and was being like Toriel and Asgore's son. And like, apparently his whole thing was like, yeah, I'm going to Earth and I'm messing things up. And like, I'm going to be evil. And so like, even like with that perspective even added on top of that, right? Like, I think it's interesting to see like the different, how different people react to being casted out of Earth and kind of being put in this position of oppression. I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So to continue, players explore an underground world filled with towns and caves and are required to solve numerous puzzles on their journey. The underground world is home of monsters, many of whom challenge the player in combat. Players decide whether to kill, flee, or befriend them. The player meets various monsters during a quest to return to the surface. Mainly through the combat system, the player navigates through many bullet hell attacks by the opponent and can opt to pacify or subdue monsters in order to spare them instead of murdering them. These choices affect the game, with the dialogue, characters, and story changing based on the outcomes. So, the combat system is like one of the core things in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Between the option to kill or spare your opponent, and also with like the bullet hell stuff. I want to get your guys' opinion on the bullet hell stuff, since that's more like, I feel like that's, I was gonna say more of an interesting thing, but it's definitely not more interesting than the spare system. But like, I feel like the bullet hell stuff is just interesting from the idea of like, this didn't fit with the game narratively that much, but they make it work in the sense that like, different characters and different enemies, their personalities kind of shine through the bullet hell system, if that makes sense.
Yes,
like that, you kind of get a feel for like who like Papyrus is, for example, like through his like the way he attacks in the bullet hell stuff. And like, it's weird, cool, and interesting kind of how Toby implemented this into the game.
Yeah, the combat system and the bullet hell stuff, it's creative. Mechanically, it's it makes you more active in the battle system. It's like, oh, if they're gonna attack me, I actually have to do something.
Yeah.
So it's whether it's like avoiding projectiles or trying to avoid like this, I don't know, the seahorse's buff arms that are coming through the like the hitbox or whatever.
Yeah.
But like you said, Blessed, like the personality of these enemies really shine through in their attacks. Because like, if I'm, how was it? I think like in the midpoint of the game, you play this, you fight against a, like an evil version of the dummy. And
yeah,
in a way you have, and then towards the end of that fight, you have to like, not just avoid his attacks, but you have to make the dummy hit itself with its own attack. So you're like dodging, and then you're trying to dodge it in a way that like redirects his attacks to hit him. And that's kind of how you defeat him. So they do a lot, like Toby does a lot of, you know, breaking convention. It's not just like, oh, I'm going to avoid a bunch of projectiles in this box by moving the heart. It's going to like go off screen and it's going to play into like the enemies themselves. And so a lot of their personality shines through, like, yeah. And then with the spare system, it's kind of like the text that shows up too, before you make your decision of like how, oh, this enemy is feeling this, or this enemy isn't even looking at you in the eye. This enemy is like thinking about food or whatever. These aren't specific examples, but within their attacks, but also the text boxes that tell you what they're doing is like, it does so much for the characterization of, you know, these enemies that, well, I want to call them enemies because I want to call them my friends, but like,
yeah, that's true.
It does so much to give them personality without, you know, oh, I don't have to like walk up to them and engage in a dialogue sequence. It's just, it's all part of the combat system. It's not just like, you know, just to give you a gameplay purpose, but also to serve the narrative and who are these monsters that, you know, embody the underground.
For sure.
Yeah. And I'll even say that like the combat system feels like it's even more about storytelling than it is about combat. Especially if you're playing like pacifist, then like it's almost like none about combat, right? Then at that point it just becomes like you're playing dodgeball while also trying to solve a puzzle of like, how do I get this, how do I spare this enemy instead of having to kill them.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, and so it's very interesting that way. But lastly, the game was inspired by the Mother and Mario and Luigi role-playing series, the bullet hell shooter series Toohoo Project, or Toohoo Project, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, and the British comedy show Mr. Bean, which I think is super interesting. And I didn't mention, because like you mentioned toward the beginning of the podcast that like Chrono Trigger is an example of like a game that kind of drew you to Undertale for its style, right? And Earthbound is probably the one for me where I think I got into this game after listening to Giant Bomb does like their Game of the Year podcast at the end of each year.
Yep.
And I think I'd listened to Giant Bomb's Game of the Year that year. And they talked about how like Undertale was like similar to Earthbound. And then this happens to me every year with Giant Bomb for some reason, where like there's one game where I'm like, I should check that game out. And I end up playing it. I loved it. It happened with like Jazz Punk. I forget what other games it happened with.
Yeah.
But Undertale was one of those games where, like, after listening to that, that's why I played Undertale in January, because I had listened to Giant Bomb's Game of the Year, like right beforehand.
Yeah, I think that was Austin Walker too, who was he was gunning for that because he reviewed it for Giant Bomb, and then he was like making some real good points at the end of the year for that game.
Yeah, shout out to Austin Walker.
Yep.
But yeah, Earthbound was like the big influence that drew me to the game, and we even talk about that a little bit later. But so. Question, what does Undertale do that hasn't been done before? We talked about quite a few of the elements, talked about combat a little bit, but is there more you guys can even pull, or if you even want to talk about that a bit, let me know. But like, Alex, I'll go to you. Like, what does Undertale do that hasn't been done before?
Yeah, it's weird because I am, like I said, I'm pretty ignorant to the RPG genre, and so which Undertale is a big part of and has been inspired by classics, and so it's hard for me to sit here and say like, you know, what hasn't been done before, because, you know, a lot of times art in general, I am of the opinion like there's nothing new under the sun until you like put your spin, your interpretation of it, and put it out there and it becomes its own thing. And so for me, it's really like the amalgamation of all of these different elements that Undertale brings together, you know, the comedy, the characters. I think the combat is probably one of the things that sticks out to me when you ask this question, even though we've already kind of talked about it. But for me, I'd never played an RPG with bullet hell mechanics. That's not something that you think of when you think of battle systems from RPGs. And I think it just kind of, you know, I think Michael mentioned earlier, it allows you to kind of be more active. And I think for me, that was a big thing because I come from, you know, I grew up playing like shooter games and FPS games and stuff. And so I think one of the barriers as a kid for me to playing RPGs was the downtime. Right. And, you know, I loved reading and all that, but at some point, like it was kind of a slower experience. And I think as a kid, I didn't necessarily appreciate those. And so going into Undertale, I kind of had like this best of both worlds is like, oh, like I have this amazing dialogue and these amazing choices to make, but also like there are things like you know, the sans boss fight, or, you know, fighting the spider or Metaton, and how all of that combat was just ridiculous. Some of those combat scenarios were ridiculously hard, especially when you're trying to spare them and you can't just kill them. Like you literally have to survive so much. The Metaton boss fight when they're in their final form is just, man. It was pretty difficult.
I think the big one is probably Miss Muppet or Miss Muffet or whatever her name is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the one where I feel like people always get stuck on, and like
always fight it. Yeah,
yeah. Her or Undyne, because like Undyne is like you kind of have to figure it out. You kind of gotta kind of realize that you have to run from her when you get into the big boss fight with her, instead of like continuing to try and spare her.
Yeah.
And then you get into that chase sequence. That took me a minute to figure out, because I was like, God, why is she just murking me over and over?
Yeah, that took me a lot longer than a minute though. Like, oh yeah. Man, that's clever things like that.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Michael, what about you? What do you think Undertale does that hadn't been done before?
I think I want to also bring it back to some of the battle mechanics, because of that. Yeah, I'm glad you actually brought that up, Bless, because the way in which you beat bosses, it's very clever, because it never stays on one thing for too long. You know, it's you know, on one hand, I'm dodging enemies and then it's sparing them, because that's what I do for a pacifist run. But like when you get to Undyne, it's like, oh, I'm doing like shield reflection, and I'm trying to, it's almost like a rhythm game in a way. I don't, if I recall correctly, her arrows that attack you actually go to the beat of the song. So in a way, her fight is like almost a rhythm game, because it's like, I'm trying to match up these arrows, and then these arrows, you know, the certain colored arrows are going to like flip around and hit you from the other way. So you got to anticipate that. And then, you have to like run away and actually and bring you back to the overworld and actually run away from her. And while she's throwing spears while you're trying to run. And then and when I think about and then the Asgore fight where he like breaks your ability to spare or whatever there. So like now you have to think about this differently. It's like, it doesn't stay on one combat concept for too long. And in such a short game, it's you think about it, it's like, oh, did he... You know, I didn't expect this much variety in a combat in the combat for a game that's maybe like 5 or 6 hours.
Yeah,
but it's just constantly surprising you over and over and over again. And there's like so many examples of that, and it's littered throughout the game, and it all works. Like I don't think there was a moment in which I thought like, oh, this is like legit bad. Like I'm not enjoying this. It always served the purpose. Like even for when you fought Muffet, like I'm glad I had a spider donut, because if you give her a spider donut, she's like, oh, you're cool. Like you're with us. You're can good. Pass through. Actually, we don't have to fight. And I was like, what the hell? That's an entire boss fight. And at first, I was trying to like do it straight up, where I like dodge stuff, do the dialogue sequences, and then try and spare her. But I was having trouble with that. And then I use like I think because the spider donut heals HP. And then I tried using that item. And then she's like, oh, I see you got spider donut. You're cool. You can pass on through. And I was like, oh, what the hell? Like,
so ridiculous.
Just like constantly surprising you with things like that.
Yeah.
And I think we'll probably touch on this a little bit later. But I think you all, one of y'all also brought this up real quick, is like the animation, because it's a...
Oh yeah,
it's like a retro style game with more or less like, I guess, pixel art, I guess you could say. I don't know the exact terminology used
for sure.
Style.
I mean, I think it's pixel.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah, pixel art. But the way things are animated portrays a lot of emotion. Like Toby Fox does so much with so little. Like it, you see it in the way, you know, Papyrus raises his eyebrow when he says a certain thing, or the way Flowey's face transforms from this smiley, happy, cute little figure to this evil ass flower that wants you dead. And it's just like these shifting in pixels portrays and communicates so much. And
even like the text boxes, like Papyrus's text being like oversized and in Papyrus font, and then like the sound it makes when it's typing on the screen, like that adds a lot to his personality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, you know, you don't see a lot of games do so many different types of things, man, because I don't know. It's it's one of the things I'm still impressed with when it comes to Undertale.
So one of the key elements of the game in the story is choice, being given the choice to like kill or spare enemies. and this is going to be like a very broad question, because like this is like very much like the core mechanic of the game, but to you guys, like, what purpose does the system serve, like, the overall game?
I guess I can take a stab at that, but it's like it gives you the choice of, you know, how you want to engage with this. Like, whenever I'm like in stealth games, I'm always doing non-lethal hits. Like, I'm using a stun gun, I'm not using guns. So I'm always prone to being like the Paragon type. You know, I don't want to hurt anyone if I don't have to. And then obviously like the game responds to that. You know, the way the dialogue when you talk to other NPCs reflects that. And, you know, the story outcomes, of course, are affected by whether or not you kill or spare. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it kind of, the way the writing is it kind of puts you in a weird position where it's making judgments of you based on your play style. And it's, a lot of games do like choice based stuff and have a reactive world, but the way in which Undertale does it is a lot more, it's a lot more personal. You know, it feels personal the way it's written and the things that happen to this world.
So in terms of audiovisual fidelity, Undertale appears very limited, and doing research for this game, I was interested to see like comments and stuff in like reviews, because I went to IGN's review, for example, and they gave it a 10 out of 10, and they also gave it PC Game of the Year, and I went to the comments, and there was like a lot of comments being like, wow, you gave this game like PC Game of the Year, you gave this game a 10. And I think Undertale's kind of like defeated that over the years as it's grown to age and people have kind of gotten familiar with it, but at the time it seemed like its appearance and scale kind of did it, not a disservice, because people who played the game understood it and got it, but people who from the outside looking in were could kind of be like, oh, what? So from your guys' perspective, as a game that has that, like, I mean, whether it is like pixelated or doesn't have like high audiovisual fidelity, right? How does the game kind of make up for this, or even like use it to kind of serve its own merit?
I think it is a case of, you know, limitations are good, right? And I think the game abides by many of its own limitations and its pixel art, and by and large every enemy in the game has, you know, 4 or 5 frames of animation, and they are black and white, and you know, Toby, kind of like Michael said, does a lot with a little, and I think that is kind of stuck to for the most part of the game. And I think that when you get to the finale of the game, when you meet, spoilers, when you meet, essentially Photoshop Flowey, I think it makes that moment in the game so much more disorienting and effective, because the entirety of the rest of the game sticks to this limitation. And then the final boss fight, the climax of the game breaks through this mold that the game has stuck to for so long. And then I think it adds and enriches the experience so much and I don't know if that was, you know, I don't know if that was the intention all along during development, or if Toby kind of made a last minute decision to do that, but from my end, from the player's perspective, it seems so intentional and so genius to do as far as that format and so that's kind of where I'm at with the art. Like, yes, it is limited, but I think the animations are so expressive, and the writing that each character has and their own leitmotifs with the music, like it all works together for me.
Real quick, fun fact, I want to give a shout out to the reviewer for Undertale at IGN who gave it a 10 out of 10. It's my homegirl Callie Plagey, who is now the reviews editor for us here at GameSpot.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow.
Nice. I just want to give a shout out to her, Callie, because I will follow her to the ends of the earth, because she is on point with that, dude. Like, when she tells the story of how she had to fight to give that game a 10 out of 10, I'm like, yo, props awesome. To you. Like, because, like, I honestly feel like if I was put in that position too, like, I would fight for that as well. So, hey, shouts out to her.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. So let's get into some more game facts. So the story behind the game's release. Undertale was developed by Toby Fox across 32 months. Development was financed through a crowdfunding campaign on the website Kickstarter. The campaign was launched on June 25th, 2013, with a goal of $5,000. It ended July 25th, 2013, with $51,124 raised by 2,398 people, which is essentially 1,022.48% of the original goal, which
dang
one is so this game was made on a budget of like 50,000, and I mean, I don't know what the numbers are in terms of like how much it ended up like selling through or how much it's made in sales, but I'm gonna assume that he made a profit.
Yeah,
which is pretty awesome.
I'd say
just an assumption. But yeah, that's awesome. And then Undertale's creation ensued after Fox created a battle system using the game creation system Game Maker Studio. He wanted to develop a role-playing game that was different from the traditional design, which he often found boring to play. He set out to develop a game with interesting characters and that utilizes the medium as a storytelling device instead of having the story and gameplay abstractions be completely separate, which is pretty admirable. And I really like that as like a forefront of how you approach design of the game. Some more tidbits for the game's writing. Fox was partly influenced by the silliness of internet culture, as well as comedy of shows like Mr. Bean. He was also inspired by the unsettling atmosphere of Earthbound, which is a question I want to ask you guys. Like, have either of you guys played Earthbound?
It's one of the gaps in my gaming history.
Oh, man.
Yeah, because, like, you know, I told y'all about how much I love Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy VI and Super Mario RPG. But, you know, if I played Earthbound back in the day, like, I am damn sure that would be, like, in my top 10 as well. But I don't, for some reason, I missed it. And then so when I kind of understood that going into Undertale, I'm like, oh, I understand where Toby Fox is coming from. I know that Earthbound is going to be a huge influence on this game. So I kind of did the thing of like, all right, now that I finished Undertale, I'm going to look deeper into Earthbound. And then when you mentioned that it's been inspired by the unsettling atmosphere of Earthbound, and when I read and think about the ending of Earthbound and the way been told, like, I definitely see it right there, because both of those, like, that's a lot of the spooky kind of psychological horrifying elements, I guess, that kind of get to me. And I wish I had played Earthbound back in the day.
Yeah. Man, Alex, have you played Earthbound?
I have not. Actually, funnily enough, my only experience with Earthbound was for OK Beast Extra Life 2017. I went in and found a list and of all of the sprites and all of the in-game maps used in Earthbound. And I recreated and reanimated a lot of those sprites and used it in our trailer for the I watched a lot of Earthbound footage and then recreated like a fake gameplay scene in After Effects with all the sprites. But that is kind of my
you're a nerd.
That is kind of my only like I watched a lot of Earthbound making that trailer and kind of saw a lot of I had a very big appreciation for all of the art that the game used, because I was just like in these sheets of sprites, and that's about the extent as to which that I've messed with Earthbound.
So I played Earthbound. I've not finished Earthbound it's a weird sort of story, but like in high school I had a phone. It was an Android phone called the Samsung Moment. Which was essentially, and if anybody is listening and they had that phone, they're probably getting super hyped because like nobody had that phone. But it was an Android phone with a slide out keyboard. It was great.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Until it broke, and like every time I would slide out the keyboard at a certain point, it would just scratch the inside of the phone.
Nice.
It was bad. but I had the Samsung Moment, and it was like early in like the Android kind of life cycle where like emulators were a really popular thing on the platform, and so I had like a Super Nintendo emulator on my Android, and I could play it using my keyboard. It was great. It was baller, and I'll play Super Nintendo games in class all the time. And Earthbound was one of those games. And I got like probably like 3/4 of the way before I like messed around with like save states, because I was like, man, I've been playing the game the way it's supposed to be played this whole time. I wonder like if I start using save states, will like make it better, will make it easier. And I messed up and just deleted my whole game.
No.
Like deleted my save.
Ugh.
And so like I never finished Earthbound because of that reason. And I got to like a really interesting point of the game where you like go to like it's hard to explain, but essentially like I think his name was like Mr. Universe or something like that. Or Mr. Saturn. I think it was Mr. Saturn. I got to the Mr. Saturn part of the game, and if people played Earthbound, they probably know what I'm talking about. You essentially go to like a new area. But I got there. But I say all that to say that Earthbound is just a super, like, unsettling is a good way to put it, I think. It's just super weird. Like, it does have some, I don't know if I would call them horror elements or even like scary. It's just stuff that's like unsettling. Like, mm-hmm. you mentioned the end of Earthbound, right? Where you're like fighting Gygas, who essentially, like, I don't know if I want to go into like the theories and like kind of what Gygas kind of resembles. Yeah. Essentially, it's out there. Like, it's very out there and very interesting. If you want to look it up and look into it yourself, if you're listening. But yeah, I think Undertale does like carry a lot of that influence fairly well. Like, both the games are just like, I mean, they're both top down RPGs. For those who don't know, Earthbound, you play as Ness, and like you travel around with your friends, and essentially you're trying to stop an alien invasion. And the game takes place in like modern times, and it's very strange and very weird with its references. There's like a lot of Beatles references for some reason. My favorite gag in the game is that essentially when you're like when you approach like a path that is like you're not supposed to pass, or like essentially like the game, the developers wanted to like block a certain path for you not to get through until you like reach a certain point in the game. It's essentially a giant pencil that is blocking your path. Like, think of like a Snorlax.
Yeah.
Except instead, it's just a gigantic pencil, and in order to get past it, you have to like search and find the pencil eraser.
Oh, wow.
In order to get rid of the pencil, and this is what's called. And like, it's very weird. It's very interesting. But yeah, Undertale, I think, does a lot to carry those like weird, unsettling, unique influences and carry them through the game. And so I just want to give that quick shout out to Earthbound because it's referenced super hard in the game. It's got to be talked about in a conversation like this. But let's get into the next segment, which is, why do we believe this game is special? I asked you guys, this is a question I ask every guest before they come on the show. Alex, I'm going to start with you. You said the characters. Do you want to elaborate?
Yeah, I think the characters are what really hooked me. From, you know, especially in Snowdon Town is where I really fell in love with the game. There are so many inhabitants in Snowdon Town. But one of my favorite encounters ever is a character. I don't even know the character's name, you don't even see them, but there is a house just north of Snowdon Town, where if you go and click on the door, there's somebody inside who is like, ah, I love Nox. Knocks on the door, and then you knock again. It's like, ah, yes. I wonder if it'll knock again. And then you knock again, and it's like, ah, yes, my patience rewards me. And like, just like so,
That's awesome.
Such a stupid moment. But it, like, I think all of the characters in the game kind of, I think of them in that way. Like, they all have their own personality, even if they are just really stupid, or even if there's like so much character development. You know, like Undyne starts out as like your mortal enemy, and then as if you're doing True Pacifist, you eventually like go and like go on a date with Undyne and learn how to cook, and like you're in her house, and there's just so much character development. And as somebody who was like going into this experience, you know, with my walls up, like I said at the start of the show, the characters are really what, you know, carried me through the experience. You know, how Papyrus and the attention that Papyrus uses the Papyrus font, and then there's Sans, and how they both have, not only do they have different personalities, but the way that is displayed and showcased to the character through dialogue, through, you know, typefaces in the game. It's all just, it just really, that's really what kind of brought me there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I completely agree. And this is one of the, I was thinking about even using this one for myself, because like, I think it's understated, like how comedy in games isn't used enough. I don't think, like, there's not like a lot of great like comedy games. Like, you have Undertale, which I think is probably like the best one I can think of. And then like Jazz Punk is another one. But like, I feel like comedy games come few and far between. And this game's comedy, Undertale's comedy, is super well done and is portrayed super well through the characters themselves.
Let me just give a quick shout out to Burger Pants, which is one of my favorite video game characters ever. And just, I think it does speak to the fact that the reason that the characters are so effective, I think, and so lovable, is not only the writing and all that, but also each, like, Burger Pants has how many different animations, like. I think the reason that they're so effective is that they are not only are like, is the dialogue changing and is the dialogue funny, but also their animation and their faces are changing along with what's happening really well. And it's like, it's just like that little attention to detail really kind of carries the experience forward for me.
So I just look back at the doc and realize that the element that I actually brought to the table is the humor and the comedy. And so
yeah,
I guess I'm going to talk more about that.
Yeah, it kind of ties together, right?
It does tie together. I forgot I had that, and so it makes a good transition. But yeah, like I said, like the writing in the game is pretty pristine. And like you mentioned the scene where if you're doing the pacifist run, like you go to Undyne's house, there's the whole cooking scene, right? And then there's like the whole... there's the whole dating thing between not only your character and Papyrus, but also like Undyne
and Alphys,
and the character who's and Alphys. Yes, I was gonna say I can't remember their name. But like that whole thing was like very well done, very spectacular, very funny, and also like very endearing in a lot of ways. Like it connects you. Like I guess these are like characters, and the humor and all this stuff is very connected because like all that stuff connects you super well to the characters, to the point where like I know this isn't a Deltarune conversation by any means. And if you're listening and you haven't like played Deltarune, maybe like shield your ears for like 10 seconds. But like when you see some of the similar characters pop up in Deltarune, like you gain feelings back because you're like, oh man, like I remember you. Like I really enjoyed my moments with you, even though those characters in Deltarune don't necessarily. Actually, I won't get into that. But like they're essentially different characters in Deltarune.
Yeah.
But you still have that connection, and it's still like nice that nostalgia in you, even though like the game's not even that old.
And I think like a lot of like not only the comedy but and the characters like together, they kind of subvert expectations. You know, like when we mentioned Alphys earlier, when you go to like her lab and find out like you have like a certain expectation for what Alphys's character will be like, and then out of nowhere, Alphys starts referencing anime, and like it just like it just out of nowhere, and it just like makes it so good. Like I just remember bursting out laughing finding that out.
And there was the whole texting thing too. When you and Alphys, or you're not even you and Alphys, where Alphys just texts you nonstop.
Yeah.
When you're trying to make your way through Hot Lanes or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's ridiculous. It gave the character so much personality. And like it's even hard to talk about without like giving specific examples, because like people listening who might not have played Undertale, which is like if you're listening, you haven't played Undertale, why are you here? But also like it's all like in the writing. Like it's all like once you like read, or like once you see those lines and start to like get a feel for like what the attitude of the game is, and like in what the personalities of the individual characters are and how they differ from each other. It's super good and super endearing.
Yeah, one thing I will say about the humor too is that I don't know, there's when games try at humor, there's a lot of ways in which it can fall apart and not land. And you know, I worry about that in games that try to be funny, because more often than not, at least in my experience, is that it's either like okay, cool, or it's like yo, this is y'all try too hard. That's the problem.
Cringy,
like when games try too hard to be funny, you know, it's a tough thing for, you know, I guess writers to portray in a way that you know captures its audience. And then so I don't know, like for Undertale, it's like it just keeps getting it right throughout the entire game.
Yeah, no, for sure. And like, I mean, the question I had asked was like, when's the last time you like laughed out loud, like hysterically playing a video game? And like the last time I could think of that, I'm playing Devil May Cry 5 right now, and I laughed like once, but it wasn't like an out loud like how, like I wasn't like going crazy. Like during the intro credit scene of that game, there's like there's just like a ridiculous moment that made me go, oh man, that's awesome, and like I laughed a little bit, but like I don't necessarily find myself like laughing that much, you know, like actually laughing playing video games that much, because it is kind of hard to pull off, right? Whether it is because of awkward animations or like things just get lost somewhere down the line when you're like, because like writing for a movie, right? Like you're writing for a person, that person performed those lines, right? It's like it's more of a direct thing than like, okay, I'm writing for this character is played by this person who's animated by this person, and they have to time it like this because they have to do this in this scenario, and is it in a cutscene or is it not in a cutscene, is it like through radio, like how are these jokes being delivered? And it's just like it's a whole ordeal that is difficult to pull off, and when it's pulled off, it's very impressive, and Undertale pulls it off. And I think a big part of that, too, is probably because it's coming from just one person. Like, I had a whole video about Undertale and how Undertale kind of makes you feel emotion and kind of the things that it pulls off, right? And a big part of that is, like, when you have such a singular vision coming from just one dude, and he's able to, like, tailor it to like his own personality and how he views the world and how he views comedy or what his sense of humor is. Like, I think it's way more felt than what it is like a team or like a whole like development squad between like multiple studios, right? Like, I think Undertale has that benefit, and it uses that benefit to its best potential.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, what's your element?
Oh boy, y'all got time to hear about my ramblings about this game's soundtrack, because I got a lot of things to say. About,
let me tell you about us, because like we had a podcast about like the top 25 video game soundtracks of all time.
Oh really?
And was Undertale number one? Or
Undertale
number
was number three. Snap. I think
we messed up.
Yeah. Oh damn! Yeah. I don't know. Well, I mean, just to kind of kick this topic off is you know, when I look at I've made my own list of like my 20 favorite games of all time, and the common thread through most of those games is the soundtrack and how much I got attached to the music, because when I'm done with the game and I loved it and I have this emotional attachment to the game and the soundtrack was popping, like I'm going to listen to the soundtrack afterwards, because like
you kind of relive it.
Yeah.
Right?
In a way you relive it, but also like the songs individually are like legit really good songs. Like this happens to me with Persona all the time. Like I have the entire Persona 3, 4 and 5 and all the spinoffs like on deck, because those are...
I think Persona 4 was number one.
It was. It was.
Damn. Yeah. I wish I was
on that.
We didn't
mess up. Yeah.
Damn.
We did good.
Dude, that's dope. Because like, yeah, that's the thing that just gets me. Now when I listen to these songs for like years and years, it's like eventually they become just songs that I like. And I'm like, oh, wait, they were attached to that game. And now I remember exactly how I felt, exactly what I was doing in that game, what I was doing with my life at the time. And it's all it's all wrapped up in the song that was in the game. And, you know, that's I just feel a lot better about the game when I get attached to the soundtrack. And that's the thing with Undertale, too, is that it's like all these songs are so catchy. They're layered like instrumentally, like the instrumentation in these songs. Like at first it's like, oh, this is a, you know, synth chiptune style, but then it has live instruments. I mentioned this at the top of the show, but. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's a lot, dude, because like I got a lot of examples out here, but like when
the ending, or go ahead, actually I don't want to steal your example.
No, it's all good. Like with Asgore is like when you hear that dun, 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 and then it kicks into like the actual battle theme, and you got like actual like, well, it sounds like live drums and this whole orchestra backing this moment where this like really good song, it just encapsulates the emotional intent of what's trying to happen, like the story they're trying to tell in Undertale. And, you know, I'm like on the edge of my seat playing this game, and I'm like on the verge of tears, and this like, you know, this whole orchestra, and like in the middle of the song, it's like dun, 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 dun. Like after that part, it just like kicks in with this like this whole orchestra that just kicks you in the ass, and it's this whole moment in like that's
and the way it all comes together too, because like when you get to that part where like you enter the home or whatever, and like it's reminiscent of like where you started the game from, and you just hear like the piano that just the dun 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 dun, and like it starts off slow and like you make that journey, and like you say, like it starts to tell the story of the game and stuff like that, and it builds, man, just like the
that
the
snare drum comes in and it's like
oh man
yeah, so good.
Yeah, the way the songs throughout the game, the songs sample themselves, it's a narrative tool, like I think, because like when I think about, yeah, like you mentioned that piano sample from the home theme, is that, you know, Toriel and Asgore are, you know, tied together. And then when you use this sample from like a song you associate with Toriel into Asgore's theme, it's like they're connected. And like it reminds you, like these characters are connected in a way that's like, I don't know, like when you notice that piece, and you're just like, oh, snap. Like, it does so much to communicate the emotions that this game's trying to portray.
Yeah,
and
there's a lot of motif going on in this game. It's been, and like it does. Toby Fox did it more with Deltarune also, maybe even more so. But like, you know, Sans has a theme.
Oh, yeah.
Papyrus has a theme. So many of these different characters have their own theme. And even like when you get to Snowden, right? Like before you get to Snowden, you have like the whole path leading up, and it is like the empty piano.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of the tune in my head right now, but like people know, you guys know the empty piano I'm talking about. Then you get to the town and it picks up, and it's very like, it introduces the town in such a lovely way, and you feel a sort of way getting there. It's very satisfying.
Yeah, and I don't know, like also the like going from Hotlands to the core. Like the way in which, like, okay, like Hotlands, that song. That song.
Yeah,
slaps.
No, I was gonna say Hotlands itself. That song is
that
serious.
Song slaps. I love that song, and I just listen to that shit on loop. But then when you get to the core, and it's like this this electro techno version of that. And it's like got the same da 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 da, and it's like whoa, that was in Hotlands, and now it's like it's kicked up a notch where it's like this techno song, and there's a sense of finality to that song too. It's like you gotta go, like shit is building up. You are reaching the final phases of this game, and the music communicates that. And then when you walk through the castle, and it just like takes away music entirely, it's all quiot. And you're like, what the hell's going on?
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, just this chilling moment where there's no music at all, when the previous level, it was just popping. And the thing, too, in the core is that it doesn't kick to a battle theme. It just keeps playing that song throughout the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's this sense of momentum that the music is pushing you through. Because, like, before in all the other battles, you would have, you know, the battle theme, but whatever. But when they do that in core, it's like, I was like, oh man, this is like, this feels so cool. It feels like it's building to something. And again, it's the it's an example of the music communicating something on top of being such a good song on its own.
Oh yeah. And I want to give a shout out too to Waterfall. That song too is super I think it gets overlooked a lot, but like it starts off with like the dun, dun. I can't think of the tune, but it's like light. It's not a piano, but it's more so like bells essentially. Yeah, and then it builds toward like what some kind of string instrument. I'm not sure what instrument it is exactly, but like the way it transitions and builds to that, and the way it characterizes that area of the game is super good.
Shout out to Undyne's theme real quick.
Undyne's theme.
Dun, 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 and then
and
then they use it on the date too.
Undertale is like the one game, one of the few games that I could just like name probably most of the songs from the game. Like I could think of like, okay, what you can tell me an area of the game, and I could probably like play you back the song from that area and being like, oh yeah, this is a slap. Oh yeah, this area too. Yeah, that area is a slap also. Yeah, that one too. Like they're all slaps, and they all like stick with you.
Yeah, and also
so good.
You also mentioned like character themes. I think that's the last, I guess, thing that'll pop into my head when it comes to music is like the character themes. It's like when you talk to Sans, it's like it sounds silly, and Sans is like a silly character who's always like trying to pull jokes. And when it's like combined with his voice, like I'm just like like I just get a very good sense of like who this character is. Like, oh man, I love Sans. And then when they like towards the end, when they flipped out on you, and then Sans gets very serious.
Like
reflect, it's like, all right, this is where you are now. This is where you've been. Let me talk to you about some real shit. Let me tell you what's really going on in this world. All right.
Yeah. And then I know what's happening.
Yeah. And then he's just like this figure who you grow attached to because he's funny and he's silly. He's kind of cute, even though he's a skeleton. Mm-hmm. And then, the way in which he becomes such an important character in helping you understand the world, the story. It's like these two sides of this character that I just, you know, I like a lot.
And we can't talk about the music without bringing up Megalovania, which the end of the genocide run where you're facing Sans. And like it's crazy how this man saved one of the hardest slaps for a moment in the game where most people aren't going to get there. Most people aren't going to do the complete genocide run. And that dude saved such a slap, man. Song goes hard.
The thing is too, is like Sans boss fight in genocide run is like the hardest thing in the world. I mentioned Callie before, and she said she spent 2 weeks straight just practicing that boss fight to make it
Dear
past
Lord.
It. So it's like 2 weeks of listening to Megalovania on loop. And so it's like, I sure hope that song slapped, because if I'm going to be listening to it for 2 weeks straight, you know, it better be good. Yeah. And it is good.
It better.
Oh, yeah. Let's get into our final segment, which is categories. It's essentially, I have different categories that I ask every episode, which are the same question. Every episode. So it's recurring for every game we talk about. The first category is the indie factor. Does this game capture the spirit of the indie dev? And this is an interesting question, because for every other episode, Undertale is the example I go to for this question, where I'm like, oh yeah, like Undertale. Like Undertale, it feels like it captures like the heart of its creator and all this stuff. Alex, I'll throw it to you. For you, does Undertale capture the spirit of the indie dev?
I think so, and I think you mentioned it just a few minutes ago, Blessing. Like this game feels so unified in its vision, in its music, in its art, in its story, and everything. Kind of, it is so, the attention to detail is so prevalent, because I think Toby was so obsessive over every little detail, and because, you know, he had the help from his friends, but because he was, you know, mostly the sole creator of it, he was able to just kind of dive into the details, unlike, you know, maybe, you know, another studio where teams are segmented, and there's some games that are created by teams across the world from one another. And so I think communication sometimes can kind of, and just like different visions maybe that subsets of teams have, can kind of like maybe like muddy the waters. Whereas when you have like a sole creator, or mostly a sole creator, that things can just be like more true to their vision. And yeah, I think Undertale really does encapsulate that.
Mike, what do you think?
Oh yeah, this is the prime example of, you know, the spirit of an independent game, and, you know, the fact that it was kickstarted on like a fairly modest budget and made by one dude with the help of a couple other people. It's like, and it with a breakout success that, you know, in a way it went viral, and you know, this is like the perfect, I guess, indie success story. And its journey through its development, and how this was like a, I guess, a passion project of someone who is like, yeah, obsessive over every detail, like y'all mentioned. And, you know, just being so unique in many ways, it's like, yeah, there's someone who had a unified vision of what this should be, and it really shows through. So this, yeah, like you mentioned that this is the example that you go to talk about this particular question. It's like, well, yeah, there's a reason, because like, it covers all of that.
It's pretty wild that this game was made on a $50,000 budget. And I'm really curious about what the $5,000 version of Undertale looks like, and if it's like different. Because like, it seems like he puts all his skill to good use here. And like, it's not a case where he has to like throw money at it to make it happen. Like this game is very modest in his scale, but it used that modesty to like, every like the fullest extent, like in every direction. And so yeah, I agree with you guys that yeah, this game does capture that spirit. Next category is successful successor. Can this game get a sequel that lives up to it, or does it have a sequel that lives up to it? So this one's interesting, because it has Deltarune, which isn't a sequel nor a prequel. It's like a side by side almost. And it only has a chapter one. And so yeah, I'll give you guys the option if you want to answer the first, can this game get a sequel that lives up to it, or if you want to answer the second of, does Deltarune kind of live up to it, or does it seem like it's going to live up to it? I'll leave that to you guys. Michael, I'll have you answer first.
Sure. I was nervous about playing Deltarune when it dropped, because it dropped on, I think it dropped on Halloween, because I was dressed up as Goro Majima from Yakuza, and then like my homie was like, hey, you want to be on stream? Toby Fox just dropped this new shit. And I'm like, wait, what? I just got in. I'm dressed up in a costume. What, I'm going to be on a live stream? And so, yeah, and I played it entirely that day, and I was just nervous about like, oh man, I trust that this can be live up to those expectations, because like coming off of Undertale, you can imagine how monumental those expectations are. And I was surprised by, in so many ways, like we could have an entire episode breaking down Deltarune, but obviously we're not going to do that. But in so many ways, it makes good on the unique elements of Undertale while also using it as a platform to, you know, tell a new story using a lot of the same things. So it has both this balance of, you know, reusing the things that we love and then repurposing them in a different context. And in that way, it's, I wouldn't say they played like Toby Fox played it safe or anything, but it's you know, it taps into everything I would want out of like a quote unquote sequel or prequel or follow up, I would say. And the changes that Toby made to the battle system and just the continuation of incredible music and incredible artwork the way it's like, I guess like it's like a direct upgrade visually, I suppose. It's more of like a traditional 16-bit era kind of thing. In so many ways, like Deltarune is such an incredible follow-up to Undertale, and I think it's incredibly successful from an enjoyment perspective of someone who holds Undertale to such high regard. It's like, wow, it was unexpected, but this pretty much lives up to those monumental expectations.
Yeah, and I think I'm with you there. I think I'm interested to see where Deltarune goes, since like this is only chapter one. But even just for chapter one, right? Like it tells a pretty full story, right? There's like a beginning, middle, and end. Where it ends feels like it's a full experience. And it's like it's also like a comparable length to Undertale, and so it doesn't feel like it feels like a chapter one without feeling like a chapter one, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, and so like, and I think I also agree that it's successful. Like I don't think it's as good as Undertale, because Undertale feels more full, and I guess Undertale also felt more new when I played it. Whereas Deltarune is very much like here's what's coming
derivative of Undertale.
Yeah, super derivative of Undertale. For like, I mean, and that's of course like purposeful, right?
Oh yeah.
Based on like the characters literally being like pulled from Undertale. But even like despite all that, right? Like it has its own music, it has its own tone and style and care, and it does have its own characters, right? Especially like the main characters you play. And once you get into spoilers for Deltarune, right? Once you get into the underground, and learn about those characters, right? Like it builds its own identity. And I think it does an excellent job of doing that. And it makes improvements over Undertale too, with like the combat system and a lot of its elements. Alex, what about you? What do you think?
I have not played Deltarune to completion.
What?
I know.
Oh, dare you.
I know.
My Lord.
I know. It was. I was busy when it came out, and I played the day it came out. I played the first hour of it. And I was like, I have to wait. I have to come back to this and just play
Switch.
I know. Well, actually, my plan is to play it on the flight to PAX. Like that's gonna be. Just gonna play it all the way through. But from what I played of it, I loved it. Like I was like getting teary eyed at the intro. Like.
Ooh,
seeing Toriel and like all of that, like Undyne is like a safety officer, like directing traffic. Like there is like that montage of driving to school. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, oh my gosh, like this is gonna be special.
Yeah, and in a way, I looked at that and I think, is this like are you trying to tell me that this is the idealized version of the monster society where they do live above the surface? And you know, it's like, oh, of course, Undyne is a police officer. Like, of course, Alphys is a teacher. Like, and of course, like, Toriel's like the motherly figure. And, you know, I was going to say something about the ending, but Alex, I want you to explode.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. There's just,
there's some things in Deltarune.
I'm excited. I'm very excited. Yeah. But yeah, it seems like from what I've played of Deltarune, like, it kind of, it seems like a great successor.
So the next category is called Play of the Game. Essentially, I'm going to give you guys three options for what the game's most important moment is. And you can write an option if you're like, none of these options are the one I'm thinking of. But the options I have, option one, arriving at New Home, which is essentially like the ending of the game where you get to the house. Arriving at New Home and taking that walk to Asgore as the acoustic Undertale theme plays and the story of the monsters is told. Option two, fighting Toriel at the beginning of the game and Toriel not wanting to kill you. And option three, going to Undyne's house. that's like where the whole cooking scene
as is. Much as I love the Undyne's house is one of my favorite moments in the game by far. But I think for me, man, the former two choices are definitely the pick for me. Mm-hmm. I think New Home might be my pick. I think that moment is just so poignant, and like we talked about the music cutting when you're like walking up to the castle, like it's so dramatic, and I think that's probably the pick for me. Although like Toriel, like, because I remember playing the game for the first time. I was like, is she going to kill me? Like, I don't know what I don't know what to do, because I was like, I can't kill her. And she just keeps killing me. And like, I remember searching, doing a quick Google search and be like, is Toriel going to kill me? Like, and just realizing like, no, like before she's not going to kill you. But I don't know. It just that moment was powerful and kind of speaks to Toriel's character. But I think for me, it's New Home. I think New Home takes it.
Michael, what about you?
Let's see. I wish I wrote something in. I'll make mention of it.
I wish I thought of more too, because I didn't get to play the game fully before this. Like, the last time I played Undertale was about a year ago, okay. A year or so ago.
Yeah.
And so I don't have it fresh in my mind. I have like all, like, the stuff I have fresh in my mind is from like research and like watching videos and mainly Diddy No Gaming. Watching that video.
I think arriving at Snowden was pretty cool.
Oh yeah, that was.
Yeah.
The whole going to Papyrus' house on the date.
The whole, like, highlight. Just ending sequence too of like the regular pacifist run or the neutral run and like the true pacifist runs, like both the ending of both those runs where like you have the whole fight with Asgore and Flowey and all that stuff, and then like in the true pacifist run it goes more into Asriel and like dealing with him. Ooh. That whole thing is a whole ordeal. Ooh. Too.
Yeah,
which should probably be an option.
That's the one I would want to put in here is the, you know, when you find out about the true lab, because
true
lab, like going through that and trying to like figure out
the amalgamations,
trying to figure out what this is, and then eventually like kind of coming to your own conclusion of what it is based on all the shit that you find and what the amalgamations like say to you, was like that was like peak. This game is like freaking me out. Like I got chills throughout the entire true lab, because that area is like, that place is fucked up, yo. Like, just like the story of the amalgamations is like, dude, that was like running experiments, like trying to weave like monsters together, like to get their spirits to unlock the magic barrier or whatever. It's like some really fucked up shit, like in this game that was supposed to be like cute and cuddly and maybe challenging and kind of scary in parts. Like, no, this is like straight up like horrifying stuff.
Yeah.
And then so when I kind of like found out about that through the true pacifist run, I was like, oh, I thought I knew everything about this game, but the true lab is like something. I always advise people, like, hey, if you're gonna play this game, find, like, don't search anything else. Just make sure that you can get to the true lab, because that's something.
Yeah, and the way I played this game too, right? Like, I played it originally in end of 2015, beginning of 2016 on the neutral run. Because I was like, I'm not gonna not kill everything in this game. Like, I was very stubborn about it, where I was like, I ain't got the time to do like 100% or whatever it is, right? Because I was thinking in my head, I was like, doing a true pacifist run or doing a regular pacifist run is gonna be like a whole ordeal. But I finished it and I was like, oh man, that was awesome. And then it wasn't until I replayed it like 2 or 3 years later, I think it was 2 years later, and I did the true pacifist run and I got to the lab and I was like, I can't believe I missed all this. Like, this is legit, like, pivotal. like this is wild. What's going on?
It's a whole new context to like what was going on the entire time. So
yeah, for sure. In the last category, it's called masterpiece doesn't mean perfect. If you guys could change one thing about this game, what would it be? This question I almost hate asking, but I feel like I gotta ask it, just because like I feel like the answer, this one gets the most interesting answers,
man.
Damn, that's that's tough,
dude. Don't pin me against this game, man.
Yeah, how you gonna make me talk shit about this game that I love so much? Now, I think now I kind of think about it is throughout the environments, I guess I kind of wish there was a little bit more depth to the puzzles, because in Hotlands you got the platforming stuff with the arrows and trying to go to the platform, and then they have like that block moving mini game where you have to like move the blocks and then you can shoot like a thing to unlock the next area of Hotlands. And then
there's the ice in Snowden.
Yeah, and then some of the stuff in leading up to Snowden is like, okay, that's cool and all, but if there was one thing I would ask more from this game, from Undertale, would be to I would just wish there was more, a little bit more in terms of the puzzles within the environments.
That's fair.
I'm stealing that answer because I was having trouble coming up with something. Yep. I think that's a good point. I think, the puzzles are a bit simple, and I kind of enjoyed the simplicity to an extent though, because it reminded me of a lot of the puzzles reminded me of like playing through like Pokemon, especially the the platforms and the arrows. That one especially reminded me of Pokemon.
Yeah, that's like specifically like the Team Rocket casino.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I'm there with you.
Yeah, but as an adult with a more developed brain, more.
what are you trying to say about Pokemon?
I love Pokemon. But maybe a little more advancement in kind of the puzzle strategies. But other than like I was gonna have trouble picking something because I really do think it's just such a phenomenal game and such a polished game.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me this feels like a cheat answer almost, but I wish it was longer. Like I wish I could spend more time in this game. I almost wish it was. And this is gonna sound ridiculous. And people are going to disagree with this, but I almost wish the game was 30 hours long.
Oh my gosh.
More for selfish reasons than for practical reasons. I'm sure that would make it a worse game. But, like, you know, like a big reason why I love Persona 4 so much is because, like, I spent so much time with that game that I feel like I'm connected at, like, the rib to that game.
Oh, man. Bless. We got to talk about Persona 4, baby.
Dude, Persona 4 is in my top five. Like, that is for sure a top five game for me. And like Persona 5 even, like I like Persona 5 less than I liked 4, but I still ended up falling in love with that game because I spent 120 hours
with it. I think we're the same person, man.
Yeah. And so like Undertale, I think is still perfect at its length, especially with the replaying, right? Like if you do the neutral run, that's like 5 hours. If you do like a pacifist run after that, that's 8 more hours. And if you do a genocide run, I'm not sure how long that is, but I assume that's like maybe another like 8 hours maybe. And so like total, it can probably get up there.
I platinumed it in 10 hours.
Yeah. And like the PlayStation Platinum is like almost like it's like a joke platinum almost because yeah, like it has a thing where you're feeding the dogs or no, you're feeding like the dog statue, right? Is that what it is?
Like, yep. The dog shrine.
Like, there's a dog shrine. That's what it is. And you're like feeding it money essentially. And it's like it's basically a joke about how trophies are useless, which is great. But yeah, like I can still go back and do the genocide run, which I haven't done yet. So yeah, it's a bad, like, it's not even a critique because it's not really a critique. It's more selfish, but like, I think that's to say that the game is good the way it is. And I just wish I could play more of it. And I guess that's what Deltarune's for almost.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I was thinking about saying that too. Like, oh, I wish it was longer, but I was like, no, that's kind of a cop out, but no,
yeah,
I would agree with that though.
Exactly. Well guys, thank you for joining me, Alex and Michael. I appreciate you guys for talking Undertale with me. This is fun.
Oh yeah. Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, of course. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Blessing Jr. You can follow Alex on Twitter at It's Van Aken. And you can follow Michael on Twitter at Michael P. Hyam.
Yes.
Awesome. And you can also see his work on GameSpot.com. Check that out. Give his work a comment. Or you guys have a comment system, right? I assume.
Yeah, we got a comment system. But, you know,
what's like,
tread lightly,
what's like the best way for people to interact with you?
I think through Twitter, honestly. A lot of us use Twitter. So it's the most direct way to like talk about our work if you're interested in what we do or checking out like what we're up to. So, yep.
Awesome. So, yeah, follow Michael. Check out his work on GameSpot. Tweet him. Tell him that you love what he does. All that great stuff. Of course, this is Indie Piece. Every episode, we talk about a different indie masterpiece, or what is at least publicly perceived to be an indie masterpiece. We got 8-episode season coming to you, and so see you guys later. I need a better sign-off. What's the sign-off, Alex?
Oh, man. Something like this has been Indie Piece.
Indie Piece?
Yeah, I was thinking. Yeah. Indie Piece, y'all.
Indie Piece out.